here we go again. I'm Neil Fagan.
And I'm Jeff Owens. Welcome to Scribble 365.
Yeah, well, there you go. Another Scribble show, another week. That's going to be fantabulous. I've just made that word up. Hope you don't mind.
Well, it's a poetic license. We can do what we like on this show. Poetic license. It's what we can do.
So over the weeks, we've had some... What did you say we had? We had a smorgasbord, and then we had a veritable feast last week. What are we going to have this week, then?
Let's call it a banquet.
A banquet, yeah. Let's have a banquet. There's some really good things on the banquet today. They have been scribbling. So all you fellow scribblers out there, thank you very much for all the work that you've been putting in. It's going to prove to be a great programme today. So let's give you just an overview of some of the people who are going to be on the programme. So we've got Susan Worrell, poet Petri. Petri, I think is how you pronounce it. He's won a competition that Karen King put in. A guy called Gary Spooner, Ryan Woods, David Thorpe, Marilyn Ward, Mike Provenzano, MJ Hummingway, Plainface Portes, Mel, Dorian LaRue, Tammy Marek, and Jen Wall. So it's really a...
I better get a cup of coffee.
You better slip your shoes and relax. Just sit back, as we say every week, you know, kick your shoes off, pour yourself a cup of coffee, sit back and enjoy the fun. One thing that struck me, though, Jeff, was we've been all over the world, really, with these interviews. You know, we do this Meet the Poet session. So we went down to Cornwall, then we went from Cornwall to Minnesota. Then from Minnesota, we went to Lancashire. And this week, we're going to Berlin with Meet the Poet.
Well, we're not getting any air miles. We do it all from the comfort of our own home.
All from the comfort of our own studio. Anyway, we've got a packed show today, so let's crack on with it. So first, out of the blocks, is a lady by the name of Susan Worrell, who's produced some great work, and she has it voiced by a gentleman by the name of Alan Johnson. And I think this is a really good way to start the programme off. So have a listen to this one.
I used to be loved here in this land, touched and caressed by many a hand. Now I'm left on a shelf in an old empty store, gathering dust, alone and ignored. My cover so dusty, you can't read my name. Don't judge me by this, inside I'm the same. The words on my page, in print clear and bold, when you look closely, a story unfolds. A fantasy tale full of magic and myth. A princess asleep, awoken by a kiss. Monsters and dragons, fairies and elves, hidden inside me, here on these shelves. My cover's so dusty, you can't read my name. Don't judge me by this. Inside, I'm the same. I long to be held by many a hand, touched and caressed once more in this land.
What do you think to that, then?
That was a lovely piece of work.
Was that nice? So that's what I said. Sit back, chill out, kick your shoes off. And just listen to it, let it wash over you.
I'm particularly liking the trouble that our poets are now putting into their production, because we didn't have to do anything like that one. Someone just sent us in a piece. So, thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, I mean, Susan's quite a talented individual. She writes lyrics for songs as well as her own poetry. And this gentleman, Alan Johnson, does all the voiceovers for her. And it's a brilliant piece. We've got quite a few of them in, and we'll profile those as the weeks go on. So that was great. So thanks very much for that, Susan. That's a great way to start the programme. Now, there was a competition running by a lady by the name of Karen King, who's a poetess and has appeared on this programme numerous times and will appear, no doubt, numerous times more. And she set up a competition for somebody to win a prize for the best poem. And a gentleman called Poet Petri, who's based out in the US, actually won the competition, and he won it with a poem called Feathered Crane. So as part of the winning of the prize, what we said we'd do is we would promote it and broadcast it on the Scribble Show. And I'm so glad I said that, because this is a great piece. Really is. So have a listen to the Feathered Crane.
Feathered crane. The Siberian crane, also gracefully known as the Siberian snow white crane. To ornithologists, it is of the family Grudae. This large bird has a small bird brain. These rare birds are a skeletal marvel as you watch them flying or walking with ease. They traverse the marsh feeding on crabs, eels, small fish, walking with reverse knees. Distinctive, adults nearly all snowy white, except for their black primary feathers visible in flight. Worldwide, their numbers decimated by overly being hunted. That's a fact, for survival they fight. Let's all try to be aware of the fragility of such a slim-legged, long-necked, long-beaked bird. Speak to your neighbors, family, children and friends of the plight of the crane and be heard. Poet Peter E., 2016, all rights reserved.
There you go, Poet Peter E., what a great poem that is. It was a deserved winner in Karen King's poetry competition. Superb piece of work.
That could be in a wildlife program, that one.
It could, actually. It was really good, wasn't it, the way it was put together. So yeah. I was quite pleased that we decided to play that one and we made that offer to the winner of the competition. And I think what we'll do with Karen, because she runs these competitions every month, is everybody who wins one of Karen's competitions, we will broadcast their work on the Scribble Show.
Yeah.
Which is a great way of doing it, because it's all the scribblers out there. Now, moving swiftly along, I've been in dialogue with a gentleman by the name of Mike Provenzano, and he's been submitting quite a few poems. And I said to Mike, do us a favour, Mike, record one of these, would you? I'd love to hear your poems being voiced. And he has, he sent it in, and we're going to play it now. It's called Inner Child by Mark Provenzano.
The voice in my head, hidden behind locked doors, deadbolted, sealed shut. Sheltered from a cruel reality, the inner child frolics without care. Cautious behavior for the meek. Insecurities run amok. A lost me within myself, torn and bewildered. Blinds closed, curtains drawn, caged in darkness. Soundproof walls filter out white noise, hearing only my breath between heartbeats. This familiar voice of reason speaks in subtle tones. These whispers of sweet promise slip in, unscathed, shaking me from complacency, leaving me no place to hide, freeing me from this cage. Now no longer lost, no longer now am I a child.
Hey, see, the quality just gets better and better.
I can relate to that being the inner child inside. I think I've still got a little bit. Well, you and I have both got a little bit left of that.
Definitely got a bit of inner child inside us, yeah. We've been accused of that on many a fine occasion. And I like that piece, and that's why we dropped it in. But it'd be good just to mention to everybody what Scribble's all about, because it's all about the poets and poetesses out there submitting the work to the Scribble Show, which you can find us on Facebook. You'll see that in the show notes after we've done the broadcast. The more work that we get in, the more we can broadcast. And the more we broadcast, the more we bring poetry to the masses, which is what it's all about. And it's all about them. It's all about their work.
Yep, absolutely. And that this wouldn't be anything without contributions from from the people out there. So, keep scribbling, guys.
Yep, keep on going. Because we're thinking of doing also Dead Poets section as well in the future. I think that's something you were talking about.
Obviously, we know that there's an absolute wealth of poetry which is in the public domain, and some of it is obviously has incredibly high standards. So, obviously, we'd just like to sort of share that with you. So, we're going to dig out. In fact, we'd actually probably ask for those of you that are obviously poetry fans, if you want to pop us a request for your favourite poet that sits in the public domain, then we'll obviously dig it out and read it back, maybe produce something on it.
It's great. Okay, so now, as I said right at the very beginning, we'd been over to America, over to Cornwall, up to Lancashire. Now we've gone over to Berlin, and I interviewed a lady by the name of Kara Johnstad, who's a visionary and is quite inspirational, I have to say. And you know when you get carried away with a conversation and it runs and runs and runs? I did the interview with her yesterday and it was just such a good interview that I've managed to pull it down to about 14, 15 minutes. But it's really worth staying with this because it's great to listen to what actually inspires her to do the work that she does. So have a listen to this one. This'll blow your socks off, mate.
Yeah, I'm actually originally born in St. Louis, Missouri, and I came to Berlin with my family when I was a child, so between the ages of 1 and 6.
Right.
Berlin had the wonderful wall around it, and my father was flying in and out for Pan American. And then actually I grew up in the beautiful fields of Wisconsin and spent a lot of time, which for me is very important if we're talking about poetry and lyrics,
yeah,
a lot of time in the fields and talking to the, you know, the animals, the barn cats and the dogs and the cows and the whippoorwills. And I don't know, I have a lot of great imagery that I pull from always, which is that the time actually being so connected with nature and very, very far away from a big city.
Sure.
And then, yeah, and then Europe called me again when I was in my 20s.
Right.
And I had the privilege actually to see that wall come tumbling down. And it's a great city of transformation. So I think, yeah, I stay here because there's just so many wonderful people working here, living here. And it's a city that continues to, continues to rise above it all, right? I mean, it just gets destroyed and then it rebuilds and gets destroyed and rebuilds. And we hope now that it stays just a beautiful, growing metropolitan, yeah, city in the middle of Europe, right?
It's a real metropolitan city now, isn't it, Berlin?
Yeah, it's really, really changed. I mean, we have a lot of great people coming in, also from England and Scandinavia and, I mean, from everywhere, actually. Australia, I mean, that's the, you know, France, Italy, Greece. I don't know, I have so many friends. There are many Russians, there are many people from Poland, they're, yeah, Canadian. I mean, it's really, really an international city. And
right.
And I think that's fascinating as an artist. And still we have prices that are affordable compared to other big cities if you want to live as an artist. So I think Berlin is really attracting a lot of filmmakers and poets and musicians and artists, painters, because, yeah, we can live here and work really well and still have good conditions actually to do our work as artists. So
yeah, sounds great. Yeah. So I noticed on one of your pages that you're doing these piano lessons. Is that something that you do as just part of everyday life?
You know, that is really, really new. I mean, that is so crazy because, and the reason it's new is actually I'm really well known for transformation through voice work. My passion is actually the voice. So I work with the voice and mentoring voices all over this world, especially people that are writers and luminaries and people that want to change our world for the better. I think that's, yeah, where I'm at, right? And many, many people, I think the other thing that I'm very good at is connecting to the beginner's mind and connecting to that pure flow space. And I've never, ever suffered from writer's block or any of these things that people are terrified by.
Yeah.
And so many people came to me and said, well, Kara, they were just over intellectualizing the whole piano thing.
Right.
And a few years back, it's not that long ago, I grew up with classical music and I learned my Bach and Mozart and everything else like everybody probably does. And a few years back, I shifted when the music industry also changed. I was working always with a band and with orchestras, and I always had a lot of beautiful musicians around me, but they were, of course, hard. At that time when the music industry started to shift, they were also hard to always finance. I mean, from a production side, right, to get 7 people into planes and trains. And
yeah, it's an expensive hobby.
And, right? So then I took this huge jump. For me, it was really scary. I felt really shy. But I went from composing in my little studio and handing it to a musical director or handing it to an arranger,
yeah,
I went to saying, okay, I'm going to dare myself and go on to stage, which meant that I had to memorize 2 hours or 1.5 hours of music and lyrics and
wow,
all stuff. And that was really, that was for me a very big jump because until then I'd always been a songwriter, of course, but I,
yeah,
had my band, right? So I came across an idea which is very new and very revolutionary. It's called pattern piano, and there's many different ways to approach it, but it's basically breaking down the very big keyboard into, you know, the numbers, 12 and 7. And suddenly, for me, something unlocked inside that I suddenly could see very quickly all these complex compositions that I had racked my brain out trying to learn. Yeah. And I just was amazed because I could finally remember, like, everything that I was, that I was writing and doing without ever having to write it down. I mean, for me, that was fantastic because I could do that with the lyrics, but I could never do that. The truth is I couldn't do it with piano.
Right.
I could only write down my chords, or I'd sing them into a computer or something. Yeah. And then I would, you know, then they'd get arranged. So that was phenomenal. And now a lot of people come to me and they said, you know, Carr, how do you do this?
Yeah, I was just going to say to you, how do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to come. You know, I'll fly in over and you create a little community. And it's really, really exciting. And so I am able to teach people that have never, ever touched the piano before in their lives within 3 to 4 hours how to play every single major scale, minor scale, all keys, major chords, minor chords, all keys, accompanying themselves with basic rhythms, of course, to the chromatic scale, and and play the basic, the basic chord charts that we need to play if we're, you know, having fun browsing through some, some cool lyric chord charts or whatever. Or also at some point, to support people to write their, to take their poetry and put it into music, right?
Yeah.
So this is what you saw is very, very new. We sold it out this weekend, or I sold it out, and it's the first time on the weekend it sold out, and the next one is already getting sold out, and it's really exciting because it supports people to not get locked into these belief systems that they can't do it. And I think everybody has this dream when they see a big grand piano or somewhere, some horrible hotel bar and nobody's around. You gotta go over there and play Chopin or something, right? I mean, everybody
Everybody has that dream. Everybody has that dream.
Yeah, they do. And everybody also, I mean, it's great. You know, my life is so fantastic because also everybody has a dream to sing, right? Mm. But many, many people I meet, they're terrified. They're terrified to stand up in front and sing.
Yeah.
And it's also exciting because I know people that, they drive fancy cars and jump out of airplanes with parachutes and everything. And if you ask them to sing Happy Birthday to their wife, they would basically, you know, their knees would buckle under.
Yeah, they'd fold.
They'd fold, right? And also with the method that I use for voice, it's about as simple as a piano, is that I'm able to show them how the voice actually works very naturally and give them a consciousness for these muscles that we've never learned how to use as kids, that are inside your throat and tongue and jaw and all those exciting places. And within a couple of lessons, the voice is free.
Wow.
And I think that's because I'm kind of, I meditated many, many years. So I kind of am out of that normal kind of intellectualizing everything. And I'm just in that pure flow space. And so I seem to manage to be able to support people really well to get back to that place of innocence. Right.
Brilliant. So tell me a little bit about your poetry, because, some of the words that I'm listening to, and because you set them to music, they're just absolutely stunning. In fact, that first one I played on the show the other week, I must have listened to that about 10 or 12 times now. So what gives you the inspiration for that?
The inspiration for that, their very first poem, Loving You, that was played on Scribble Radio. Actually, the inspiration for that was a very profound, very strong pull. It was one of those virtual love affair pulls, right? Mm. Where I actually felt incredibly attracted to a person which I knew was the most idiotic and strange and illogical thing I could ever do in my life, right? And it turned out to be that way. And it still, the pull is still there. And And it's this idea, well, I mean, it wasn't even an idea, it was the truth. You know, if I stay in the place that I am at as a human being and I don't risk saying yes to love and yes to this relationship, a part of me will die because I will not honor, I will just shrink. I won't honor life that's unfolding. At the same time, if I say yes to this craziness, a lot of my other parts of life will also die. And so that's basically it. Loving you, I'm going to die either way. And, you know, and that's actually the essence is that's often like that in big, passionate love. A part of us has to die to take the next steps and to grow into something bigger, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And, so that was that very strong poem. And there were many, many, many beautiful poems, and also the next album that I am working on and bringing out, it was all with that very strong soul, basically soul pull, right?
Yeah.
That soul mapping. And I think if you listen to a lot of my music, it's actually that. It's a lot of trying to be honest with the present moment and see the poetry like a map to my travels here, while I'm here, while we're all here. I mean, we arrive, right, in this kind of strange land of Oz, and at some time we're going to go, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to go or whatever, change form or not. I mean, it is to be debated, right? But but in the end, we sometimes are so fixated on our own stuff, but the truth is it's pretty magical. I mean, I think it's pretty, I don't know. I go between being incredibly philosophical and prolific and being incredibly wacky and dreamy, you know?
Oh, you fare extremely well with the Scribble Show, man.
So I think my poetry, which I've been doing, my first albums came out with RCA. I was with RCA.
Yeah.
Crazy as I was. Hmm. I was with RCA and Warner Brothers and Ariola and whatever. It was 1987, right?
Right.
And I think that my, and I've always been writing these lyrics. And then I got sidetracked because I was told sometimes that, my God, if you do covers, you're going to become more famous than if you do your own stuff, right? So this is constantly trying to keep your legs in all rivers of life, and at some point you're just drowning in different projects. But I think a few years back I said I did a beautiful project with Michel Legrand, who's he called me. I wanted to do his work. And his Alan and Marilyn Bergman are the lyricists to his great songs, actually, and they always attracted me. And so I did for about 2 years a fantastic jazz project called Le Grand Love with some of the greatest musicians walking the earth. And I was really, really pulled. And yet this project was getting stuck, as again, the music industry was changing and the musicians were on tour, and I was, stumbling, trying to hold this all. And my own writing kept on getting, more and more reviews. And I thought to myself, wow, some of these big cats, they really show us. I mean, and we're not attentive at times. But what I learned from that project was they're only, for example, with Michel Legrand, he's only doing his own stuff. He's only doing his own stuff.
Yeah.
And I realized that I wasn't, that I was doing my own stuff. And at the same time, I was singing a Gershwin here and there. And at the same time, I was singing a Cohen over here. And then I was singing whatever. Like, and it's not that we can't learn from other people's work. But at some point, I think everybody has a very unique voice and a unique signature. And so the last 5 to 10 years, basically, have been really dedicated and I'm very passionate about bringing out the next albums and books and poetry books. And the next album called Moon and Capricorn is a full symphonic orchestra.
Wow.
It's stunning. It's exciting. I did it. It's almost finished. I did it. I did it. We have 60 incredible musicians. I found an amazing arranger in Rome. His name is Fabrizio Piliucci. And it's all the many, many musicians from Morricone and just fantastic people. And the orchestra is under the direction of Laura Lungu. I mean, what a great name, and that's not poetry, right?
Yeah.
And they're all just totally turned on by my stuff. And so that's what's going to happen next, is to put poetry and lyrics and the melodies into, you know, string sections and oboes and flutes. And
right.
And yeah, it's fantastic. And if you're a little poet and you stand on a big soundstage and have that poetry come alive in string sections, all I can say is it was and it continues to be one of the most amazing journeys possible to hear your, you know, the words that you might be writing on a napkin somewhere come alive like that. And
fantastic.
It's something, yeah. And so I think that's I like birthing things, right? So that's also why I also am crazy enough to do the piano workshops or help people with their voice, because it's a really, really important thing that each and every one of us on the planet gets in touch with their own wisdom and with their own, with their own perceptions, and be able to share that in their, whatever way they want to, in a creative way. But I really think that we, and that's what I felt from you guys over there at Scribble Radio. I felt this authenticity and this community of people that were really hitting that core essence of loving to write and share and look at things with new eyes and with freshness. And
but for now, Cara, thank you very much for joining me today. It's been superb talking to you, and maybe we can do this again in the next couple of weeks, but thanks very much.
Would love to. Greetings from Berlin.
There you go. Very good. That you could teach us to play the piano in a week.
In a week?
Yeah, in a week. Probably in a day.
That's a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, that would be a challenge, especially for you and I, who are tone deaf.
Yeah.
It'd be great to see, though, wouldn't it?
I like the idea that she can fall in love with a crazy person. Is that something to do with why she likes being on Scribble Radio?
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem. Yeah. She's well suited to the Scribble show. Anyway, she mentioned somebody on the interview. I thought it was a great interview, that, with Cara. She's a great supporter of us, and she produces some really good work. But she mentioned a gentleman by the name of Fabrizio Palluccio.
Yeah.
Now, he writes lots of different music, and he's been working with a guy called MJ Hummingway, which is a great pen name, I think. And they produced something together, and that's called One Day in Spring. And I'm going to play that next so you can hear the music in the background that Fabrizio's written.
Right,
and
yes.
Listen to the words that MJ Hummingway says on this particular poem. Have a listen.
I'll put my feet up on the desk.
Yeah, just relax.
Give to my songs melodies, to give to my dream sweetness. Suddenly a wave broke over my heart's shores and drowned all language. To my lips no name came. She stood beneath the tree, turned, glanced at my face, made sad with pain, and with quick steps came and sat by me. Taking my hands in hers, she said, "You do not know me, nor I you." "I wonder how this could be," I said. "We two shall build a bridge forever between two beings, each to the other unknown. This eager wonder is at the heart of things. The cry that is in my heart is also the cry of her heart. The thread with which she binds me binds her too. Her have I sought everywhere. Her have I worshipped within me. Hidden in that worship, she has sought me too. For crossing the wide oceans, she came to steal my heart. She forgot to return, having lost her own. Her own charms play traitor to her. She spreads her net, not knowing whether she will catch or be caught.
Very mellow show this week, isn't it?
I was on the beach. I was there.
it did carry you away, that one, didn't
it? Yes.
I mean, the whole programme's been a little bit like, there's been a bit dreamlike this week on the programme, and it's going to continue because it's extremely mellow.
Which has been a nice sort of like contrast to last week's show, where we had clanging chains and sort of like the Hammer Horrors, and this week we're in a different sort of place. I love the journey. It's different every week.
It is. It's getting better as each week goes by. So that was by MJ Hummingway, which is a great piece. I really do love that one. And I also came across a guy by the name of Gary Spooner while I was talking to different people around the world. And Gary wrote a piece called Kapiti Island. And this is really nice piece, this. He doesn't like his own voice, but who does at the end of the day? But I think he voices this really well.
Kapiti Island by Gary Spooner. Stronghold of Tiralpraha, the island Kapiti. Ever since we moved here, you've been never far from me. Angular and jutting, rising from the sea. On a blue sky day, she's oh so close, you can almost count the trees. I've only been to see you once, just once stepped on your shores. Surrounded by the birdsong, you soon forget your chores. Tranquility, peace and harmony are attributes of yours. You used to be a whaling place, where blood would stain the water, and countless ocean mammals would meet their grisly slaughter. And just like then, there's little trace of buildings, bricks or mortar. Mana to the south of you is similar, but shorter. You are an icon of the coast, a beauty to behold. You're not a piece of real estate to be rented, bought or sold. There's many myths surrounding you, as yet remain untold, known only to the Kehoa and the very old. Constant and majestic, you define that piece of sea that stretches on from Pukerua Bay out past Otaki. Stronghold of Tiralpraha, the island Kapiti. Ever since we moved here, you've been never far from me.
There you go. Still stayed by the sea.
Yeah, we've got a nice nautical theme going on.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, we're going to change that in a minute. But at the moment,
is that a real island? Because it felt real to me. But clearly, it must be from sort of the neck of the woods that he's from.
Yeah, he did say some of the words in it, I think, are of Maori descent.
Ah, right.
Some of the words in it. But it just gave you that feel of Kapiti Island. It sounds so majestic, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
So staying really with that nautical theme. There's a poet called, and I'll get this wrong, Dorian Lau, or Dorian Lux. I'm not quite sure how
you covered your bases either way.
I've covered my bases either way.
So you're fine.
And she's produced a great piece of work. Now, it's been voiced by Cara Johnstad, and it really does bring it to life. It's called The Shipfitter's Wife. So we're still keeping on that nautical theme, as you can see. And let's just carry that through and get a bit more relaxed.
I loved him most when he came home from work, his fingers still curled from fitting pipe, his denim shirt ringed with sweat and smelling of salt, the drying weeds of the ocean. I would go to him where he sat on the edge of the bed, his forehead anointed with grease, his cracked hands jammed between his thighs, and unlace the steel-toed boots, stroke his ankles, his calves, the pads and bones of his feet. And then I'd open his clothes and take the whole day inside me. The ship's gray sides, the miles of copper pipe, the voice of the foreman clanging off the hull's silver ribs, spark of lead kissing metal, the clamp, the winch, the white fire of the torch, the whistle, and the long drive home.
Well, that's enough of the nautical theme. So we've got that far with it, but
that,
what a
that
nice
sounds like
that
a long
was.
Day at the office to me.
Yeah, it does. So quite a tough way of earning a living, that one, isn't it?
I'm just wondering if I come through the door smelling like that, whether I get the same reception, but yes.
It'd be nice
to be
that
a,
you
it
would.
To be a shipwright's wife, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lovely work.
Okay, so that's all the professional bits done. So now we're going to move on to, we do this short story piece, and a lady by the name of the Plainface Poetess, that's her pen name, produced a short story called The In-Between, which is a bit of a science fiction story. It's a great piece, this. Unfortunately, she wanted somebody else to read it. She believed that it needed a male voice on it. And so I decided that I'd actually voice this for her. And it is science fiction. It's a different genre than the one we had the other week. And it goes like this. Short story by the Plain-Faced Poetess. In Between. Chapter 1. It may be that the old astrologers had the truth exactly reversed when they believed that the stars control the destinies of men. The time may come when men control the destinies of stars. Arthur C. Clarke. The hum. The sound of in-between in non-space is something more perceived than heard, like tonal notes deep and just out of earshot, felt and translated to every atom. Some describe it like standing on top of a giant machine. Niall, the petite, waif-like Afsa, inhabiting the in-between at that moment, was in fact, as usual, humming along in its head with the sound harmonically. Unlike most jumpers, Niall found the great mysterious hum familiar and comforting. It was an occupational hazard for Arisan Galaxian engineers travelling the in-between. Jumpers wrestled with terror, decaying time, no air, no senses, direction null. Only their own heartbeat and the mysterious hum to keep them from suspecting they're dead. For most first-year engineers, it was overwhelming, and after a few jumps, most opted out of the program. For Niall, it was filled with fond memories of jumps suspended in its father's strong arms, his gentle, intelligent, soft voice humming harmonics. When Niall was in between, it felt nearest its beloved father's presence. The slim Afsa shifted incrementally within the field. No big movements in transfer. It prepared for the 2-minute end push. The last 2 minutes of suspension were always intense. Everyone, including Niall, had to fight unreasonable panic and terror. Another anomaly of in-between. Those last 2 minutes evoked strong feelings, similar to sensations of drowning or strangling. Jump space mechanics explained it as the pressures of the movement of matter suspended from positive atom push to the negative atom draw. This was used to create a path where no path should be, like threading a hole through non-space and drawing the person through. Niall concentrated on the phrases Father had taught it, a meditation to patiently endure the last few minutes of in-between. Toe, meadows of red flowers. Shan, sunlight on a mountain lake. Chi, the face of a loved one, bright and true. Stop. No. Not Fidja's face, Father's face. now fought the niggling distraction and started again. Din. An orange cat stretches in the sun. Pa. A bluebird alights from a branch. Then suddenly, with deity-like prominence, light and sound from the subspace station interjected itself back into the AFSAR's existence. Niall started violently shaking as the stasis field passed from in between to subspace. It occasionally happened, no one knew why. The AFSAR was thankful for the cool down of subspace to try and quell the reaction prior to materializing on the jump station of Terrius 4. It rubbed its arms, trying to shake off the shivs, as it was called. The jump station control room and Guardian slowly materialized into view. The Guardian brought the panel slider down and looked up, nodding up at Niall, inspecting. The AFSA stepped down off the platform and presented its wrist with a planner apparatus to the Guardian waiting by the platform. He held the device to open the apparatus, then he removed it from the thin wrist, noting the still shaking hand. He nodded deeply to the AFSAR Ministry officer in respect, and saluted the Ministry salute, an arm sideways across the chest. Welcome to Terrius 4, Dane Niall. I want to know what happens next.
I want to know why she's called the plain-faced poetess.
Yeah.
There's nothing plain-faced about that.
That was great, wasn't it?
That was an amazing piece of work. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm shaking off the shivs.
Yeah, that's right. I just want to know what happens next. That was incredible. So she's given us a bit of a taster there. I think we need the rest of it. So I know you're listening. So perhaps you'd send us part two, because we'd really like to listen to what's going on.
We'd serialise it.
Yeah, we
could. She'd clean up.
Yeah, she would. Cracking piece, that. Superb. So now we're going to move to a different area. Now we're going to cover a guy by the name of Mel Mel. We've not dropped any soundtrack under this, and you'll know why when you hear it. And it's a great piece, this.
Oh, with a soul. Oh, I love the moments. The anticipation. Oh, with a soul. Oh, I love the moments. I hate the waiter. Oh, with his soul, with his warm caress, his decision making, lust filled mind, doubtful hesitation. Oh, with his soul, with much hesitation. Oh, with his soul, how do I have reservations? Reservations of us, you, the lust. What is this? Who are we? What will become of us? Oh, with his soul, with his hesitation. Oh, with his soul, how I hate waiting. Oh, with his soul, how love gives me so many reservations. Oh, with his soul.
You see, I would advise people not to listen to the show while you're driving. It's so laid back this week. You're going to lose your concentration.
So, background of Nell Mel, he's from where is he?
Not sure. Sort of been talking to him. It's great. He's obviously from the US.
Yeah, that's right.
But great. A lot of his pieces are like that. They're very kind of soothing, and the way he puts them together. And that voice, I just thought, I can't drop a soundtrack underneath that. The voice is just absolute classic in that way. Anyway, we're going to move on to a piece, one of... our contributors and great supporters, Ryan Woods, wrote a piece for the Reader's Digest, their short story competition, and unfortunately he was gutted that he didn't win. But we read it, he sent it through, and a lot of people read it and thought it should have won, because it's a cracking piece. It's been voiced by Essie Yankee, who's been on the programme before.
That's right,
and
yeah.
She puts on a different voice, a slightly childlike voice for this piece, and it just makes it. If it had sent this recording in to the Reader's Digest, it'd have won hands down, because it is an absolute classic. And here we go.
Close Shave by Ryan Woods. Mummy and Daddy argue a lot. Sometimes Daddy hits and hurts Mummy. Mummy tries to hide the bruises, but I always see them. Sometimes Mummy has a black eye or a swollen lip. Daddy told Mummy if she ever tells on him, she will be in real trouble. I feel sorry for Mummy. But today Mummy seemed happy. She came to me and said that Daddy had an accident. She said he'd slit his throat from ear to ear whilst shaving with a cutthroat razor. The thing that confuses me is that Daddy doesn't shave because he has a beard.
I love that bit, that he cut his throat. And Mummy said that he cut his throat while shaving, but Daddy doesn't shave, he has a beard. Absolute classic. That's what I expect from Ryan. Absolute classic piece, that, the twist at the end. I love that.
Yeah, it wasn't a mystery, was it?
No, it definitely wasn't.
Beautifully, yes.
It was well done. So well done for that one. So we're going to move on now to a piece by David Thorpe, and he's asked us to voice it. It's called House of Silence. And he's a great supporter of the programme as well, and a great poet, and we've recorded this for him. Secluded behind a wall of ivy, it keeps its silence. That mystical silence hovering in mausoleums, haunting the naked morning rooms, breathing the dampness of winter's past. Long silenced happy childhood voices at Christmas times, their murmuring still heard in the silence of moonlight, as a breeze sways branches of ancient trees to tattoo glowworms with their shadows. Spring rain and the heat of frivolous summers have left their traces on peeling paint, unnoticed by the prowling cats on balmy evenings, drenched with the scent of jasmine. Autumn fog and winter frosts have left their scars, foreboding messages of war and hatred enclosed its windows, with freezing lies to imprison the sighs and whispers of lovers oblivious to a decadent world. With a certain dignity, the house awaits its condemnation. Its tarnished pride guards with reverence memories of days of rejoicing and those of misfortune. Secrets of a century buried beneath the dust of silence. I really like that piece. That's a great piece, that is.
Yeah, it's a very interesting property.
It is.
I'd snap it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would.
Yeah, well, as we're getting tight as time, as we always do, we're going to move on to a lady by the name of Tammy Manicus, who goes under the name of ML Poetry on Facebook. And this is a piece she's written called Bone.
My name is Tammy Manicus. My pen name is ML Poetry, and I can be found on Facebook under ML Poetry. Sitting high in judgment on top of your throne, nothing of any kindness have you ever shown. A small, mindless person with no backbone. Your words cut like a knife, hard as stone. What is spoken in anger can never be reversed. Wrapped within itself, you are your own universe. Everything you touch becomes forever cursed, causing turmoil in which all are immersed. Lies you spin only play to your vanity. Gone is your life living in reality. Blind to the truth, lost of all sense of sanity, no shred left of any sort of humanity. The soul you had has been eaten away, evil actions helped cause the decay. Won't be silenced, it's now on display, said out loud here on this day.
Nice little piece, that.
That's a lovely piece, yes.
It is, yeah. She produces lots of those, so we'll cover quite a few of them as the shows go on, so I thought we'd include that today, which I thought was really
good. Are racing along.
We are racing along.
You're wearing
today.
Me out.
Yeah, I know, and it's exhausting, isn't it? But it's just one of those programmes where you just got to crack on and get through them. It's a bit like the top 20 of
I'm
poetry.
I'm feeling a bit like that, yes, it is. We're really going for it.
Yeah. Okay, so it was Mother's Day on Sunday. You and I are both orphans, so we didn't have a mother to
That's
celebrate
right, yeah.
with, which is a bit of a shame. But it always makes you think about your mothers. And Ryan Woods, I've spoken about before, produce a poem about his mother and the fight she had with cancer. So have your handkerchiefs ready, because this is a real tearjerker, and it is a wonderful piece and a wonderful tribute to his mother.
Hello, Neil, the rest of the wonderful production crew and fellow scribblers out there. This opponent deals with my mother's brief but sadly unsuccessful battle with cancer. Poetry can be a conduit by which to convey an important message. After my mother passed away, I was left with the task of clearing out her house in order to get it ready for going up for sale. Whilst doing this, I came across a home testing kit for bowel cancer, which is designed to detect early signs of bowel cancer so that it can be effectively treated. Sadly, my mother never used it. She had been sent it 3 years previous, but had chosen to ignore it. So please, if you ever feel that there might be something wrong with you, please get it checked out. Early detection really can make all the difference. This is dedicated to my mum. My girl is simply gone, but not forgotten. I remember thinking to myself at the time, God, if you're there, if there was ever a time to show that you care, to prove me wrong, that time is now. I solemnly vow that I want to be wrong. Held the moment with a fanfare or the throng of a marching band, but please, please just prove me wrong. Show me that I'm not always right. Show me that the feeling that's got my gut knotted up tight is not intuition, but the result of something that I've eaten that now wants to get its own back on me, that has an ambition to make me pay for my culinary crimes. It dawns on me with the subtlety of a sledgehammer that you've been hiding this from us for quite some time. I only fully realised this when clearing out your closets, and I noticed how you'd taken all your skirts because they were coming loose with weight loss that I'd been too blind to notice. Deposits of guilt weighed down on me like retracted oaths, not seeing the weight loss that you'd managed to hide by wearing bulkier clothes. What kind of son am I that, so wrapped up in my own problems, I was unable to spot yours? Tan skin from years of standing out in the elements while safely crossing school children across busy roads that served to hide the jaundice. How could I not have noticed? Serving society for so long, seeing other people's children safely to school for over 30 years, had earned you no favours from above. It had not dealt you a get out of jail free card in life's monopoly game. Am I to blame? And so I had to turn to my children as you packed an overnight bag and say, prepare yourselves for the worst. This is not going to end well. Not today. Not tomorrow. Time is like a loan. There's a limit to how much you can borrow. What kind of monster was I to give up on you so easily? Sometimes being a realist is a curse that I wish I didn't have to be. Ignorance is bliss. You'd always dealt out advice like a croupier deals out cards, but I guess you found it just too hard to take your own advice. Don't bury your head in the sand, you used to say, but you'd done exactly that, perhaps hoping that the light of day would chase away your illness like it chased away the night. I knew that you wanted to put up a fight, but at the same time I also knew already that the fight was lost, that the coin had been flipped, and I'm sorry to say that you'd lost the toss. So instead I drove you to the hospital and waited for 18 days while you were poked and prodded, while doctors whispered and nodded, who never really offered any answers or clues, who instead just skirted around the issues like dancers in a ballroom, each one trying to be charming whilst avoiding using phrases that you might find alarming, whilst trying not to trip over the words of attrition that were on a mission impossible to lessen the blow, to instill the comfort that they wanted to convey, but failed miserably like lukewarm ice cream on a hot summer day. Even though you had led a good life, cancer still cut you down like a knife. You always worked hard, did your best, paid your dues, never dreaming of your darkest nightmares that you'd receive this kind of news. We'd had our disagreements from time to time, you and I. We didn't always manage to see eye to eye. And that wasn't just because I'm 5'10" and you were 4'9". You traded light-hearted insults as if they were volleys in a tennis match that usually culminated in you giving me the finger, game, set and match. Oh, how some memories linger. But the memory that lingers the most these days is how cancer turned you into nothing more than a shell, how it took your soul and your dignity and made your life a living hell. I've learned now that life is a game of chance, of missed opportunities and circumstance. So with nothing more to be done for you, I brought you home to die and did my very best to try and make you comfortable, whilst you did your best not to quit. But for 6 weeks and a day, cancer took you away, bit by bit. and was left to watch while your life ebbed away like a tide going out, never to return to the shore that you were blessed with your gentle touch no more. Syringes of morphine and handfuls of pills were never going to fix or cure your ills. So on the 3rd of August, while I held your hand, you slipped away to the promised land, where I hope you found peace and the fresh light of day, and where I'll probably see you myself there one day, down the line when my time finally comes and I come knocking on heaven's door like a fanfare of drums. But for now I forge on like a slow-moving train, storing and cataloguing memories in the library of my brain. Because I've put my mind to it and tread carefully there, I can still remember you for the way you once were. Thank you.
And there you go. It's a fitting tribute to his mum.
Beautiful. Yeah, especially on Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, the line, time is like a loan. You can only borrow so much.
Yeah.
I thought.
Stunning.
Lesson for us all.
Yeah, so I think we better lift the mood a little bit. Limerick time, I think.
Yeah, that was a bit of a tough one to follow, isn't it?
It is, really,
From one extreme to the other. Yeah. There's a story, actually, behind this week's limerick. For those of you that listen to the show regularly, we always finish off with something a little bit lighthearted to leave you with a smile on your face for the rest of the week. And I was talking to my youngsters about limericks, and they caught me sort of like reading a few books and surfing the internet looking for some good stuff. And they said, Dan, what are you doing? I said, I'm looking for a limerick. And they go, what's a limerick? So I explained to them that it was a five-line poem of a certain structure, normally had a funny theme, followed a certain pattern, certain rules in its phrasing, etc., etc. And they said, oh, yeah, we know all about lyrics. Yeah, I can show you a lyric that I learnt when I was a young lad. And I said, what? Seriously? So they dug out one of their cartoon shows. Now, I'm not going to tell you what cartoon show, because it would plummet the depths of sort of, it would take this show to a new realm if we realised what sort of cartoon shows that we were talking about. But, so they shared with me this this particular limerick, and I'll read it out to you now, see if it puts a smiley face.
Yeah.
There was an old man from Peru who dreamt he was eating his shoe. He awoke in a fright in the middle of the night and found it was perfectly true.
Cracking.
Yeah,
cheer everybody up. That's great. Right. That. Okay, so that's it for this week. Just like to thank everybody for listening, all those scribblers who are listeners and all those scribblers who are writers.
Yep.
And as we say every week, may your God or your gods go with you. And we're going to play out this week with a very short piece by a lady by the name of Marilyn Ward called She Shone. Marilyn Ward. And She Shone. Her glory rising in the morn, beams falling on all surrounding, extending her joy, for she was sunlight, radiant in her beauty, bringing life to